came and the fitting burst and covered me with an insecticide called dimethylate, which was a popular one used by most farmers. So that put me to bed for 12 months and 2 years in and out of part-time hospital. So I did a lot of thinking during that period of time, and with all this compost we're still producing, we decided to make inquiries about putting compost worms or changing it to a vermiculture system. And we're just amazed in the next 12 months how the quality of the compost improved and gave us those sort of results we were after.
The Biological Farming Roundtable podcast helps farmers explore innovative, low-input, regenerative and profitable farming systems. The Biological Farming Roundtable is sponsored by Nutrisoil, an award-winning biological liquid fertiliser made from a big worm farm. Nutrisoil's purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food. My name is Nicola Maddock. I work at Nutrisoil. I envisage a future where farmers are rewarded for producing nutrient-rich foods and consumers have this easily available to them. In today's episode, I'm sharing with you the Nutrisoil story with founders Graham Maddock and daughter Rochelle Armstrong. From a traditional dairy farmer, Graham became a shell of himself after being doused in an insecticide in a farm accident. After 12 months of illness following the accident, Graham made the decision to remove chemicals from his farming system and started using vermiculture products produced through large worm farms. Using this natural system, Graham was able to raise his pH from 3.8 to 6.2 without the use of lime, and together with his family has built the largest worm farm in Australia, supplying broadacre farmers a natural alternative to synthetic fertiliser and chemical applications. Nutrisoil is part of building the regenerative agriculture movement, challenging corporate power who have provided misleading information about the effects of chemicals used in farming systems. Along with many others, Nutrisoil is educating farmers about the effects of these chemicals in farming profitability, human health, and the environment. It seemed fitting to release this episode on the inaugural National Regenerative Farming Day, which is hijacking Valentine's Day and raising the awareness of the massive international community swarm that is building to regenerate the earth and address the elephant in the room of increasing disease incidence linked to the chemicals that are used in our farming systems. This is my conversation with Graham and Rochelle.
Dairy cattle started to deteriorate in health and production, mainly because we were adding more and more chemical inputs. And after 2 years of concentrated fertiliser applications in trials with no worthwhile response, the kelp extracts were applied at that time as a trial, and this was an entirely new venture for us, as anything but chemical inputs were the name of the game in those years. We milked for 40 years and at last some positive results compared to chemical inputs.
Right. So going back to how you were farming, were you using lime and trace elements and were you getting responses from that?
Well, we weren't really. We were using high inputs of calcium lime and trace elements in conjunction with direction from leading agronomists. But we weren't really impressed with where we were going. We were still appearing to be very acidic soils, and the need for trace elements, we thought, may have been there to overcome some of the problems we were having, but it didn't seem to show any worthwhile response for the huge expense we put into these inputs.
Yeah. So what made you change? You were using superphosphate as well?
Yes, we were using in those years, it was 180 pounds per acre or 180 kilograms per hectare today on the instruction from the fertilizer salesman, they said that we needed to double that, and much to my father's horror, his sons started to put on higher and higher levels of these inputs. And I still believe that that's probably where we went wrong, that we were locking up essential elements in the soil, and it told out very strongly in our cattle production, particularly the dairy production, and to a lesser degree the beef cattle. And running a feedlotting system in conjunction with the dairy and beef, we're producing large levels of what we thought was a good quality compost, and we were doing trials there, but we just felt that for the huge tonnages we're putting on per acre or hectare, that we weren't getting worthwhile responses there. Still the need for insecticides on pasture and lucerne was a very noticeable thing that we thought maybe there could have been some saving there. But it was at that time our broadacre spray unit was in use constantly with insecticides, and in part of our program we loaned our spray unit to a good neighbour, and it came back a couple of weeks later with the substandard fitting on it, which he didn't tell me about. And it was at that time that I called, even 25 years later, that fateful day came when the fitting burst and covered me with an insecticide called dimethoate, which was a popular one used by most farmers. So that put me to bed for 12 months and 2 years in and out of part-time hospital. So I did a lot of thinking during that period of time, and with all this compost we're still producing, we decided to make inquiries about putting compost worms or changing it to a vermiculture system. And we're just amazed in the next 12 months how the quality of the compost improved and gave us those sort of results we were after.
Yeah. I want to learn more about the vermiculture system, but just going back to your health, for 12 months you were out of action. You had a young family then. Rochelle, what was that like? What was the effect on the family?
It was a complete shock to us, because we were used to a father that was up before sunrise every morning, well before sunrise. You know, we were dairy farmers. So when Dad didn't get out of bed for more than a week, it was certainly a change. I was quite young, I can't remember exactly what age, but so it just dragged on. As I say, people get the flu, people go down with an illness, but within a couple of weeks, I think that they were able to sort of narrow it down to the being a poison. They called the poison department in Melbourne. So for us, it was really difficult, you know, and the most difficult would have been for my mum. Yeah, she had to sort of keep everything going, and you know, Dad's brother on the farm would have had to take a more senior role, and we certainly missed him for that period of time, and it affects your whole mental health as well. So he wasn't so fun and jokey as we, you know, remembered him. So it wasn't a good time. Yeah.
Just a point on that particular insecticide, dimethoate, it doesn't show up till about 6 weeks after we had the accident, and I was in and out of the doctors probably 4 weeks after with a lot of laryngitis and so forth, and they couldn't trace it at all to anything with all the tests they did. But after about 6 weeks, I began to deteriorate fairly seriously, and I suddenly started to think back about that accident, and I said to Lynn, my wife, that possibly there could have been some connection. That was why I rang the Poisons Bureau in Melbourne and spoke to them, and they said, no, dimethoate's very, very serious. You're fortunate that you were spraying a diluted solution. In other words, the poison was mixed with water. Otherwise, it could be quite fatal. They said that if people go into places where you can buy a particular product that is a high level of dimethylate, they only need to walk out on the street, trip over and spill it neat on themselves, and they could be dead in 48 hours. So that frightened me somewhat. And they said, but you'll probably be right. It'll take a long time to work out of your system if it goes through your system in 48 hours and no test will pick it up at all. And just a warning to other farmers, tens of thousands of them, and I speak to many of them, and they're a bit blasé about a lot of these chemicals they use, which I guess I could have been a little bit as well, but it is very, very serious, the consequences. And the poisons, people said, you'd probably face dementia or depression or a lot of these sorts of things. And I said, I've heard enough now. I'll just have to go and rest up and see if we can wear it out of our system. And they said, well, that's basically about all that you can do.
So 12 months, that's quite devastating. What about the ongoing effects? I mean, this was many years ago. Is there any ongoing effects from this that you think? Did you think you came back out of that unaffected?
I believe so. There were periods since then of depression started to creep in, and it was treated fairly quickly. But, we don't know of any long-term effects. And I think the whole point was we nailed it fairly quickly, that knowing that these things could have been the outcome.
I think it's a really understudied area. So, and it's very hard to equate, you know, episodes, you know, sickness episodes through your life, but you know, there certainly has been on and off bouts of depression that we do really highly question that it goes back to that accident. Yeah.
So going back to the worm product, you would have had choices of biological products that you wanted to farm with. So you chose not to go back to chemical farming because of this. Why the worm product?
Well, I guess the thing was, for a start, we had a big input of a compost material, and it was fresh out of the feedlot, and that seemed to be the direction that we were heading. Talking to a lot of people, I was directed to people that had experience with vermiculture, and it seemed to make a lot of sense, and we went down that road purely and simply experimental, but doing trials on our own property with the worm castings, which is the solid component of the worm system. And then in later years, we did a lot of trials with the liquid output, which was even more impressive again, mainly because you can put 5 litres per hectare of the concentrated liquid on broad acres, whereas you'd put 200 kilograms of worm casting. So that was really the decision that we'd come to, that where we needed to be heading because of the concentration needed, which was much, much less.
So did you continue with your mineral applications as well, or was it purely just using the vermicast and the liquid?
Very little input from... We were in the middle of doing various trials of what we call fused magnesium phosphate, which was a product that came from Vietnam, an interesting product. But the other interesting one was we were doing soil tests over probably 20 years of using vermiculture, and to our surprise, the testing laboratory said that the addition of a good quality lime would be beneficial. And each 2 years we did a test, this seemed to be the thing. But in 25 years, and even to this day, the first paddocks that we used vermiculture on have risen from about 3.8 in pH readings up to about 6.2.
With
lime? No lime at all during that period of time. So it's had a huge effect on that side of the soil.
You were getting really good results. You talked about having to spray insecticides before. Was that still necessary using this natural system?
No, not necessarily at all. And other farms proved that within 24, 48 hours of using the vermiculture program, that it obviously lifts the Brix level or the sugar level in the crop or the pasture, and the incidence of insect or insecticide certainly wasn't needed at all. And it created an environment that insects weren't happy to be a part of, I suppose.
And your cattle health? That was a concern before. Was there any changes you noticed there?
No, we noticed, certainly not overnight, but over a period of months, there certainly be a very noticeable improvement.
Mm. What type of things?
Oh, well, with the dairy cattle, although we were planning on going out of dairying, but the last 4 or 5 years of dairy, we reckon we were producing more milk, we were producing better quality pasture, which must produce more milk. And the same thing with the beef cattle. It was quite noticeable that they were still eating a fair amount of grass, but it was at a higher quality level than initially, yeah.
So you realised that there was success in using these biological products on the farm. How did you take being on a dairy farm, using it for just yourself, to being Nutrisoil? How did that happen?
Well, basically, I was 100% only interested to go on farming. It was my love, and I'd lost a lot of time, and I wanted to not make up time, but it was of huge interest to me. But the interest shown by various people, from different pasture agronomy people to everyday farmer, showed me that I should try and put something back into the system, really majoring on vermiculture. And so I spent 6 years with a leading vermiculture consultants setting up systems over in Eastern Australia, many, many systems, and to see if we could have farmers doing this very thing, because I said to them, well, I'm a dairy beef farmer, I haven't got a lot of time to do anything else than show other farmers how to set a similar system up. That didn't work real well, mainly because 90% of the farmers just felt that even though the system was brilliant and they could get a lot from it, but most were just so busy in their own programs that, as some of them would put it, to save a bit of money on fertiliser, I think that if we could encourage you to expand your system at Yakandanda, we could utilise, your interest and your program to be able to run our programs, yeah.
So at this time, when people were starting to ask questions about what you were using, because they were noticing differences on your farm and asking if you could, make the product for them, this is when Rochelle came home. Am I correct there? Is that about the time?
I was probably a few years. You were operating from the Yakandanda farm there. You were having to pay for the manure to be brought out from the Wodonga sale yards, and then actually we'd freight the product, or transport the product into Wodonga to be able to be freighted. So it was a bit, it was a bit hard being out at Yak at that stage. But you probably did that for a few years. Yeah. And started having farmers' field days on the property, so that for a number of years people were very interested in what was going on. Yeah. And then at the same time, I suppose I was, at that time I was in Western Australia. If you want me to go back to how I got involved.
Yeah. I kind of want you to share what's your background.
Yeah, sure.
And your reason for getting involved in this business.
Yeah, because definitely I never saw myself growing up on the farm you know, remaining in agriculture. And as any, well, you know, teenager, when you finish school, you sort of think you want to go and see the world. Well, I did have a bit of a journey before I ended up back at Nutrisol. So I was most interested in human health, and I got myself down to university in Melbourne, did a health science degree, and wanted to live with my sister and live the life in Melbourne. As I went through that degree, I majored more in public health. So I was interested in whole population health. And I got really interested in, I don't know where these thoughts came from, but I was interested in what was happening in developing countries, because I liked the way, I had some idea about this village concept, the way villages worked in these Asian countries particularly. And I ended up being able to do a public health study tour to Fiji in the last year of my university studies. So I got to actually go and see that in action. And then I did an honours in public health as well. So that was my education, if you like. And then I got in contact with Australian Volunteers Abroad and ended up working in Sri Lanka for three years. So I was just always interested in what was happening there, and I got to learn so much from working with a NGO in Sri Lanka and really see how they can get messages through their communities by great communication, if you like. You know, if we had to put on a education program, you know, we'd work out who the village headmen were and the leaders in the community, and you know, lo and behold, we'd have a room full of you know, eager people ready to learn. So that was all very interesting. So I was learning about health. I was actually learning about community development. That's what we call it over here. So my next journey was to go to move to Western Australia and live in a rural town called Nanup. And I became the youth and community development officer there. So so that I was sort of really continuing this community focus, and all the while Mum and Dad were working away on Nutrisol back here. And it got to a point while I was living over there that they were sending me, you know, articles that were, you know, needed to be edited before going into the paper. And I thought, wow, I started to realize there could be a link to human health and you know, the way farming was going with the amount of chemicals and fertilizers that were being used. And what, you know, what they were doing, Mum and Dad together, was pretty amazing. And, so after a few years in Nanup, I moved back home. And also because they had a pretty large project in mind, which was to sell their part of the property and relocate just outside of Wodonga. So they would be close to the sale yards. At the time, that was their main source for feed for the worms, and also be close to freight. So it was, do we really ramp this business up and you know, turn it into something? So I had no business background. So I came home and lived in the shed the first thing I did to learn about business was a NICE course, so New Enterprise Incentive Scheme. It's a great federal government course that in 12 weeks they lead you through all of the basics in running your own business and end up with a business plan. So it's a really full-on 12 weeks. Yeah, so that gave us the starting place from a business plan perspective, and we were madly getting all our branding and business cards and marketing and all this sort of stuff ready, and then we just hit the ground running. You know, so, and the other good thing about the NICE course is it's where we met Maddie, who works with us and has, you know, close to or soon after that course. She's worked with us for over 10 years. And yeah, so that's how I ended up in Nutrisol and, you know, background in health, but very much, very excited about, you know, taking it right back to food, how food is grown.
You actually have your own health story. As well as your community development interest, you've got your own health story that is connected to food. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, I suppose, as I say, for the last, 10, 12 years, I've been thinking about other people's health. And it was a bit of a shock to me a couple of years ago, when I was I guess I was flat out going from field days to events and trying to, you know, just keep this marketing thing going with Nutrisoil. That's sort of my side of the, you know, the business development side of things. And, yeah, I became extremely lethargic. I actually had a really sluggish metabolism. I look back now. I didn't sort of know that at the time. But one thing was really particular. I was really cold all the time, even in December or even in summer, yeah. I ended up coming home from Western Australia and going to see, getting a personal trainer because I just thought, oh, I've got to, you know, concentrate on my health and lose some weight. But the personal trainer just kept saying to me, you're too tired, and sort of just pointed out that, like, you know, something wasn't right. And so quite embarrassed. It took three times before I finally went. Quite embarrassed. I went to the doctor and said, look, I'm a bit tired and I'm a bit fat. And I thought, this is embarrassing. It's like, you know, it just sounds like I'm a bit lazy. And fortunately, I didn't have to stay with this thinking for too long. Within days of having blood tests, the doctor called me really concerned. It's not too often you get a call directly from a doctor. But, yeah, he called me direct and just said, just get in here and get a script. Your thyroid is not functioning. They didn't know how I could even walk around. It was that bad. So big shock to me, and it really brought me into, you know, what I was talking to farmers and other people about. It made it really, bring it home for me. So now I have a completely dysfunctioning thyroid for life, I'm told. I've got to take a tablet, so a synthetic hormone to, you know, rather than the function of the thyroid. That's what I'm told for the rest of my life. As regenerative farming has other, you know, alternative solutions to where things are going, naturopaths and a holistic doctor have really helped me learn about some, you know, potentially being able to reverse this, you know, it's an autoimmune condition. So that's been the last couple of years. Hope that wasn't too long a story.
No, yeah. I want to know more about the autoimmune disease and how you connect that to farming.
Oh, of course. So, as soon as I was told it was an autoimmune condition, it's called Hashimoto's. That actually means that your body is attacking itself. And you sort of think, how on earth did I get myself here? And you can sort of look at, you know, what did I eat the wrong foods? Is it, you know, what have I done to get this? But the more you research into, you know, like the pesticides and things that are used in farming and other chemicals, they're starting to link that back to actual effect on hormones. And, you know, this is a completely, you know, hormonal condition, if you like. So I've sort of been aware for the last few years that, you know, that there's quite, you know, it's quite serious the way our food has been, there's residues in our food of these pesticides when we're told that they don't reside in the fruits and vegetables particularly. And, yeah, the other thing that I've just recently been learning through reading André Loy's book, The Myths of Safe Pesticides, is that it may not have been this may not have happened just from my life and the environment that I've been, you know, exposed to, but it's quite likely that my grandparents, who were farmers in Mildura and cleared land and grew vines and fruit and completely immersed themselves, which sounds terrible, but my aunt's been telling me how that as kids they'd laugh as their father came home, so my grandfather, completely covered, and they laughed and told him he looked like a snowman covered in whatever pesticides, insecticides he'd been spraying that day. So, yeah, this journey of my health and what's caused, you know, me to have this disease is quite possibly from, you know, a former generation of really, really being, you know, in a lot of contact with these sorts of chemicals. So it's still a learning progress. Like, I'm still, we've got lots to find out, but I think it's, you know, really relevant to why we want to be involved in a business that that reduces and removes insecticides and pesticides out of the food system.
Our small farming communities are at risk of extinction. Our food system is broken and our planet is struggling to cope with the chemicals we're constantly bombarding her with. It all links to corporate power, money, and manipulation of peer-reviewed science. How is Nutrisoil bringing ethics, community, and trust back into agriculture?
Yeah. Look, it's hard to get health messages and messages out in regenerative agriculture while you're selling a product. But we know that the most important thing is that farmers actually go through the thinking process that my father had to when he was unwell. And, you know, all farmers and people have to go through the change in mindset almost, you know, to be able to understand what might have gone wrong in the way we're farming and what direction to go in. So one of the most important parts of our business, even though it's not at all income generating, is education. So we find that if you can't sort of build up this whole, you know, community of farmers that understand, you know, why they need to head to more, you know, working with nature and natural practices, you know, then we're not going to get anywhere. So education. So we run lots of events. More recently, we've been trying to connect farmers through hubs. That's a really exciting new chapter for Nutrisoil. So hubs is they're basically a group of farmers that live within 100 kilometres from each other. And they're just giving each other's contact details. And because we find that a lot of farmers are really isolated and they don't think anyone in their area, and they might be right, but they tend to think that, you know, they're the odd one out. And so, you know, that's where we've become almost a centre of a hub. But we think that farmers need to talk to farmers, and that's when, you know, things really, you know, skyrocket from there in building communities. So the hubs will be a way of just, you know, giving each other's contacts and, you know, they'll be able to learn what sort of trials they're doing and what sort of successes and failures. And so that's something that we're sort of facilitating. And the other thing, which has been a really natural fit for us and we want to, you know, promote, is getting certified as a B Corp organization. So B Corp certification is probably comparable to other certifications that you can have in your business. Some get organically certified and there's all sorts of different processes. So there's a very detailed and intense process to get B Corp certified. But the meaning of the reason why we want to be certified is B means benefit. So you need to be creating, you need to be benefiting the world in some way. And it, as I say, it's a natural fit for us. We already feel that that's what drives us. It's the wanting to do good, if you like, and really, you know, build this, you know, regenerative agriculture movement, not just because it feels good, but because we need it for our you know, the human race, our health, and also the environment. So, yeah, so we are just, you know, close to getting through the process of becoming certified with B Corp, and we're really excited about that. And once we've done that and we've got that behind us, we really want to encourage this to really build in the agricultural industry so other farmers could get certified B Corp. And as it builds, as a as other, you know, it gets recognised in the across Australia, people will recognise that one B Corp organisation is someone that they can actually trust, and there's a whole lot of, you know, ethical process that they've had to go through to be certified. That, yeah.
This leads on to my next question, because I think that idea came from you working with business coaches. So at the moment, Nutrisoil has been working with business coaches for 2 years now. Are you working on it?
Yeah. It's about two and a half years. I think November 2017 we might have started. Yeah. So Rod Fraser and Alan Martin of Business Growth Strategies are our business coaches. And they have helped to, they haven't changed our direction, but they've actually really brought out how we, you know, felt about what we wanted to do. They've really helped bring that out of us as individuals and as a team and as a company. So we just feel clearer in how to put out the message, I suppose, of what we're trying to achieve. And it's just had, it sounds small, but it's had the most profound effect on all of us, as individuals and as a team and how we function. So in short, the process, I suppose, we went through an individual analysis of our own, I guess, personalities and how we, you know, where, how we best function. So we learnt a lot about each other, even though we're mostly family and we thought we knew each other well. It's been really fascinating to sort of learn, like, oh, okay, you know, some people need to think about things overnight for the decision. Other people need answers straight away. There's all these really quirky, interesting things that help you, really strengthen you as a team. So that's been a good process. And then it was just putting down in words how our purpose and our values, if you like. So that's, you know, something that I would recommend any business, you know, do. And look, I was really clear from the start, like we had our business plan, but it was a much more in-depth examination, I suppose, of who we are and what we're about and what we're trying to achieve. So it's been fantastic. And, yeah, Rod and Ellen both were the ones that suggested to look into B Corp because it was just such a good fit for us. Yeah, thank you.
What I might say, just in addition to a question you asked about getting involved in more biological farming processes, I guess the biggest learning curve came after we were using the kelp for quite some months, and then the company were very keen to put me on as a sales manager for them for the agricultural field. So I became national or Australian sales manager for the agricultural field for the company, Maxi Crop Company, and that took me to New Zealand for a period of time on farms there and farms around Australia, just as a learning curve to look at their product and how it fitted in. But it was a huge learning curve to understand the transition from the high chemicals to low chemicals to no chemicals. And I guess I'd have to say that, you know, 8 years there under a very, very good management team I worked with, it helped me hugely to jump along in leaps and bounds then.
Yeah. So how long, that's a great question, how long do you think it takes someone to transition from high chemical system into a biological system?
Well, I could say with my experience it's more or less an overnight thing. You for pasture farmers, you might set aside a paddock that you feel is not producing well, and that's what we used to say initially, show us, you know, some of your pastures, and again, going back to the kelp experience, we did that there too and see if we can bring it up to the level of others. And sometimes that might take 3 or 4 months to start and see really, really exciting responses. Sometimes in a couple of weeks it was noticeable, but certainly over a period of months there was a huge change positively in the direction of your regen farming.
So would you say it's that when they change their mindset that, you know, it's not so much that the transition has happened overnight in the ground, but the farmers change the way that they see what they're trying to achieve? So the whole, you know, you never achieve biological farming as a finished project, if you like. It's a lifelong journey. But, yeah, that's sort of why we work so much in this education side of things to help people, because they focus too much on the products, and which is really funny for us to say because we have a product. But, you know, the products, yeah, they're a tool in this whole program if we can just help people change their mindset.
The big thing with farmers, it's a real mindset where we're coming from, and sometimes that takes a bit of working through and understanding the benefits. I mean, one of the most a very highly successful farmer that used to visit me when I was very, very sick, and you know, come and visit me when you're feeling better. Well, it was 12 months or so, and I visited him, and the first thing he was showing me was how he sprays his paddocks, and I said, what with? And here he was down there putting chemical into a machine to spray his paddocks in the summertime, the summer pastures. Oh, they've got insects right through them. And I said to him, well, you should have learnt with all the time you spent with me over the months that it's a very, very dangerous path. You're using exactly the same chemical, of which I turned on my heels as the poisons people said, don't ever get involved with that product again. It'll be, you know, an ongoing sickness if you do. And his answer to me was, oh, you can't kill an old dairyman.
All right. So Rochelle brought this book up before. I'm actually reading the next edition of it, Poisoning Our Children by Andre Loy. A book I highly recommend because it really is the story and the scientific peer-reviewed information that really shows what's happened in this Maddock family is happening to others. There's statistics of health, you know, health issues on the rise and build-ups of residues in our soil and in our food that we're all not really aware of. I think read it for yourself, get to know the evidence, and you'll find your intent will come from there to really follow that biological and regenerative farming path. Thanks again, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See ya.
Please follow the Biological Farming Roundtable podcast. Share it with your friends and networks. I'm Nicola Maddock and I work at Nutrisoil, a liquid biological fertiliser made from a big worm farm whose purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food.